When I was the one doing everything, I knew I didn't have to go tell anyone anything. And now maybe there's four or five people and they each own an individual process. And it means you all have to communicate better.
Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. Establishing a finance function from the ground up demands a strategic approach that aligns with your organization's specific challenges and aspirations. By creating a strong foundation, you can create a finance function that not only addresses current demands, but also drives sustainable growth and success for the future. My guest today is Amy Ward, CFO at Blue River Pet Care. Amy originally joined the team as a senior accountant and has played a tremendous role in the development and management of the accounting and payroll teams, as well as the processes used today to provide in-depth financial support to hospitals across the organization. She served as Blue River's controller and vice president of finance before taking on her current role of CFO. Amy, thank you so much for joining me.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Can we start with you telling us a bit more about your background?
I joined Blue River 10 years ago, actually last month. So before I was at Blue River, I was at KPMG in the audit practice for 2 years. I did financial services. I was mainly on one client, which involved a lot of travel every week to Michigan. So once I got a little tired of that, I knew it was time to find something else.
What was it about Blue River that attracted you? And how did you know it was time for a change? Was it just the travel or anything else?
I think public accounting is a great place to start your career. I would do it all over again. As I looked around and I saw who was in the position above me and the position above that, I didn't have someone that was a huge mentor that I aspired to be. And I thought it might be a nice time to look external if I wasn't on the partner track. So I looked around. I did a lot of interviews that I would say were very safe and I knew maybe it would sound good, were reputable and bigger firms. Then I came across the Blue River interview and it was very different. It was entrepreneurial, a small office, more of a family feel. And it was something that felt a bit riskier given where they were at in their history, but it was something I wanted to take a leap in, try it out.
I had a similar experience. I actually started at KPMG as well. And, you know, what I loved about it was that chance to see so many different businesses and what they were up to, you know, and I almost didn't appreciate it while I was there, more so once I left, where you get such a bird's eye view into different industries, different sizes of firms, different things that they're doing. And it is such a great starting point to really, you know, get some structure, get some good mentorship as you're figuring out what it is that you might want to do. So we had a similar beginning that way. You joined Blue River and you got in there, start building a team, contributing to the team, and you've made some interesting moves and had quite the journey while you're there. Can you tell us a bit about what that journey's looked like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. When I joined, there was one senior accountant, myself, a controller, and a CFO. Over a year or two, I got to move into the controller role when we realized that the current controller was spending 100% of his time on operations. So he currently is the VP of operations today. He was doing his accounting work at night and it didn't really make sense at that time. That was great. I got to continue to build out the team underneath me in the controller role. About 2 years into the controller role, I found out that the CFO, who's still my mentor today, was trying to plan for his retirement. So they told me, Amy, long-term, we think you'd be great in the CFO role. We want you to sit alongside Ferdy, learn everything you can, and eventually groom you for that role. So it was an extremely exciting opportunity. And then I got to enter meetings with that lens. Okay, listen to how he responds. But if it was me, how would I answer the question? What background do I need? What would I not know? And this allowed me to kind of put myself in those shoes earlier than I maybe would have had I been given less notice and still quite a lot of learning to do as well. So it positioned me nicely for the potential move to the CFO role.
You've had a chance to really progress rather quickly through the organization and also in a growing company, because I'm sure the company isn't the same size as it was when you started. That's juggling a lot. How have you balanced all of that and balanced it with your personal life?
I think everyone talks about work-life balance, and I think that means something different to everyone. What it means to me is when I'm at work, I am fully in the zone. I want to be as efficient as possible, and I'm going to give 100% for work. But I also think having time outside of work makes me a better employee as well, so I can fully recharge. I think when I was in public accounting, I was working, 6 or 7 days a week, so I didn't have that. Now there are weekends where I go in on Monday and I'm like, what am I working on today? Because I truly didn't think about it. And I think the ability to separate out life and work makes for better employees all around.
And did you have to work at doing that? Because it sounds like you've evolved that way.
I think having children was a natural way that it forced me to have better boundaries, but it also makes you realize how to focus on what's important. Is that something you really have to get done that night, or were you thought it had to be? Can you make time for it the next day? So definitely something to work for and something I'm still working on, but I know it makes me the best version of myself.
You have had an experience where you are of really building up the finance function from the ground up. Can you talk about where you think CFOs should even start when they're faced with this challenge of building from the ground up?
When I started at Blue River, we owned 17 veterinary hospitals. So picture just a lot of small businesses that we were bringing together, and we were a mighty back office trying to service them. I think the best place to start is thinking, what's taking up my time? So when I started, the CFO was, I think, 5 months behind on month-end close, and the bank recs and the credit cards were piling up. And so it was learning what has to get done day to day, right? So it wasn't as much of the highly skilled work, but it was the bulk that is just running a business day to day. So I think when you're first starting out, it's taking a step back and saying, okay, in a week, where am I spending my time? And for us, it came down to, how are we paying the bills? How are we communicating with our clinics? And basic blocking and tackling.
And so what were some of your first hires then? What kinds of positions did you need to start putting in place?
I first invested in the accounts payable team, which was a completely different skill set of someone who I had worked with in public accounting. And that was something that took me a little bit of adjusting, because I was used to a lot of people who had the same background, had an accounting major. Most of them had their CPA, were very trained the same way in the different firms. And what I realized is I need some of the not as the work that is just done behind the scenes to get done. And that means maybe I'm taking a chance on someone who just graduated school, doesn't have their CPA, maybe went to a local college, is a little bit scrappier. And what I have found over the years is the accounts payable can be a great breeding ground for talent throughout the whole organization. So even then, the accounts payable clerk that started then is our director of integrations. So we have found it's a great entry-level position when you find someone who you want to maybe take a chance on, doesn't have a strong technical background, but is a hard worker. And we've found a lot of success in that role throughout.
Now, when you identify what it is you need for the business, cultural fit is also something that's top of mind, especially in a smaller company, although I would argue any size company needs to be thinking about that. What do you think CFOs should look for when they're assessing both those competencies and that cultural fit?
Cultural fit is extremely important. We are doing the numbers, but it's really a people business. And customer service is key to what we do. I think sometimes people have the wrong impression of what the finance department does, that they, are number crunchers. They sit in a corner and they don't have to talk to others, but it's the exact opposite. You have to work with many departments, We work with our practice managers out in the field. And it's super important that we have a great relationship, because it's a lot easier to ask for something when you've built that rapport or they'll help you solve a problem together. So when I think of culture, we always say the clients, we view the clients as the people that work at the practice and even the other departments, because we want to be able to give people best-in-class service and provide them whatever will help them do their jobs better.
And I love that approach of, you know, who are our customers? Because they're not always external customers. And interesting how you say, you know, it's a people line of work, because I think sometimes we don't think of it that way. We think of, hey, it's back office. We don't need to interact as much with the people. But in fact, it's quite the opposite. To be effective in many of the roles that we have on our finance teams, you need to be able to work with stakeholders both in your finance team and outside of the finance team, which means you really do need to lean in to figure out how best to work with others. So I think it's such a great observation. Now, in the early stages, technology starts to become a challenge, and there's lots of technology out there. How did you go about assessing what you were going to need for the stage of company that you were at?
Great question. Technology has always been super critical, and I felt fortunate that the people I worked for would lean on me if I said, guys, this is where we need to invest. We need to look at this next, because I was the one who was in the details for a lot of the time. The first large technology investment we made was probably switching from QuickBooks to Intacct, which is our ERP still today. And QuickBooks is so great for so many businesses, but we got to a point where we were logging in and out of 17 different instances of it. When we were printing checks, we were printing them from 20 some different entities. And it was such a time suck that should have been an easy process. And the beauty of building that the process is you have one GL system, so you're mapping everything the same. And we were able to sit down for a long time in a room and think about the decisions of how do we build out our GL system. Not today with 20, 30, 40 clinics, but when we have 100 and when we have 200. And so we had to push ourselves to think bigger so that it worked now, but it also was going to serve for us 5 years down the road as well.
What did you think of in terms of at that stage would be essential? And how did you avoid what can start to become the creeping of like over-investing in technology? How did you make that assessment?
It's an easy thing to do because everything sounds good in a demo. I think every demo you're like, wow, this is gonna change everything. For us, our focus was really on how can we consolidate up our financials. And I'd say we were less focused on things such as payment reconciliations, bank reconciliations at that point, because we weren't necessarily ready. I would say we knew we had to wrap our hands around fixed assets, even though it's not the most fun thing until you have that lockdown. It can just be daunting. So we also had a few starts and stops. We thought, oh, a prepaid module, that's going to be so great. We have these different items that we're reconciling constantly. And realistically, sometimes Excel's fine. And so it's everyone is saying, you know, Excel, get your processes out of Excel, get them in a system. That is totally true for a lot of processes, but there's some, if it's working, it might be okay. So I think we experimented a lot with that. Another thing that we shied away from was integrating all of our banks. We have today 18 different banking relationships, and you know, you can have feeds with this bank, and you can pull in the cash balances. And while for some certain size company that might work, we had to take a step back and say, okay, right now, once a week, we log into all those banks. It takes one staff accountant 2 hours. Do the math on that. It's actually not costing us that much versus what's a fee to that bank per month. It was much higher. So we tried to take cost-benefit analysis to a few of those process areas.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Venna lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at vennasolutions.com.
We tried to take cost-benefit analysis to a few of those process areas.
I think that's such a smart way to tackle it because, like you said, you can otherwise get enamored by all of the things. And, you know, along the lines with this, automation starts to become such an important factor. And yet you often start with such a small and lean team that you only have so much time for the automation. Are there any specific areas where you think that CFOs should be leaning into that automation sooner than later?
I would say automation goes hand in hand to me with process improvement. And I think sometimes we're trying to automate bad processes. So I think First we have to say to our team, if the process isn't good, this isn't going to make sense to automate. So I think it's being clear on that first and foremost. And then when you are focusing on automation, it should be the processes that there's a high risk for manual error. So I think about, we have 500 credit cards throughout in our field, and the more people that touch that process, so someone codes a credit card, someone reviews the credit card, then we have to import into the system and that, like, and someone reviews it. The more touches you have, the risks go up. So I think having automation be where we're currently spending a lot of manual tasks and where the room for error is high is the right place to automate.
Let's switch over now to you start moving from a smaller team to a growing team. There would inevitably be some pain that will come with that. How can CFOs try to anticipate some of that? And do you have any advice for how to help navigate through those challenges?
Being a part of a growing organization is the most challenging and the most fun part. When I was the one doing everything in accounting, I knew I didn't have to go tell anyone anything. And now maybe there's four or five people and they each own an individual process. And it means you all have to communicate better. They may not actually know you're part of the process. And so the reason for building repeatable processes that other people can replicate and understanding how it all works together just becomes more critical. The more people that are involved and the more complex, it makes for a different equation and how you get from point A to point B.
So then as you think about your team and as it's growing, starting to develop your talent becomes an imperative. How have you gone about supporting that growth and leadership and the skills development that your team needs?
I love mentoring and developing talent. My director of finance today was actually my intern at KPMG. So funny enough, back then, I remember I would teach her something, she would get it, and she was actually better than the staff accountants. And so we stayed in touch. And when I was the controller and she was still at KPMG, I had reached out to her. And it's so simple, but I think it really comes down to, are you giving people the context for what you're asking them to do? Because we all get so busy and it feels easier in the moment to say, okay, do this, 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 and this, and I'll review it when you're done. When if you can just take the 5 minutes to say, okay, what we're doing is to support this function. You'll know this is right if this, but often the days just get very busy. We're jumping from meeting to meeting, and it's so easy to underestimate what other people know that might be inherent in your brain. So taking the time to teach people the why will make them, one, give a better work product. They'll be more invested in what they do. They feel meaning behind their work. And just all around, I think it's better for them and the company.
And how do you go about, because I think one of the challenges we start to find is we have these good intentions. Like you said, we get busy, but you need to find ways to carve out the space for learning and mentorship. Have you had any strategies that have worked for that?
I think separating the to-do list check-ins with the mentorship, the quarterly check-ins, I think are critical. Asking at the end of a call, hey, are you doing okay? Or what's new? What's been challenging? Does not go the same as having a whole hour once every other month, once a quarter to really talk about just them. And it gives people a different space to have those conversations and not feel rushed.
And you talk about that challenge of where you now, what one person used to do and know all the things starts to get broken up, and it can become a little less aligned when you have multiple parties. I see often that you start to get this friction or lack of collaboration that can start to grow between different teams. And, you know, I think of, for instance, FP&A and controllership and treasury, and yet it's so important that they all are feeling aligned and collaborating so they all understand what each other's up to and what they need to do and how it's impacting one another. Have you got any things that have worked well to foster that collaboration?
I smile because it's all day long you have that, right? Because FP&A, they need month-end close so they can start their board reporting. But month-end is focusing on closing the books to pass it on to operations. And everyone is just in their world. They're trying to do the best they can. And it has no negative intentions. But so often this is what gets people so frustrated. And so we've implemented things such as like a pre-month-end close meeting. Hey, before this month end, what do we need to know? Because inevitably there's one or two things that are different this month that are going to cause some sort of friction. And so if we can talk about those ahead of time, we'll be able to get ahead of that in those moments, so we're prepared.
How do you create an environment that promotes both accountability as well as innovation?
Yes, accountability is very important to me because I think when we ask people to innovate, they're often big ideas, but it's hard to kind of track them. Mm-hmm. I'd say we do something where we set our goals at the beginning of the year in the finance department, and then we break up into teams so that everyone has one big initiative. And of those initiatives, it's three team members and they have to report on them every quarter. What went well? What are your roadblocks and what do you expect to get done before the next meeting? Because some of these ideas that we've had have been the same ideas for multiple years. And that's okay because they're big problems to solve, but we also have to have a communication style where we can bring it up, problem solve, and feel like we can really take those problems into real actions.
And I have experienced that as well, where we have this great intention, this idea that's been on the board for a year, 2 years, and it's a good idea, but it's finding the time to innovate, to go and give yourself the space to think about what that would look like, design it, get a plan to implement it. One of the things that I've come to appreciate over time is that not everyone in the team is on the same seasonal schedule, in that one group's busy time looks very different than another team's. For instance, FP&A and the controllership team or the payroll team might have some different schedules. And being very open about that when we're thinking about those innovations or projects, especially the ones that touch multiple parts of the team, and trying to line up the work in a way that matters and will be able to be worked on for the teams that are impacted, I think that can go a long way as well. Because otherwise, I find projects can get really stuck because we're waiting for this magical moment when everyone's available and it rarely presents itself. So it does require a little bit of very careful project management can go a long way. And I even talk about, you know, to my team, project management skill set is something we really need to have and foster on the team because it can really go a long way. I don't know if you've had that experience as well.
Getting projects done outside of your day-to-day is a totally different skill set too, because we say, are you going to swallow the frog? Are you going to do that thing that you've moved it from your list week after week after week? And at some point, like, aren't I just sick of moving this week to week because I'm never going to have time? But it's the stuff that it takes, you know, 30 to an hour to even get into it. So that time doesn't create itself, and it's extremely difficult. So it takes a grit to say, you know what, today's the day, no matter what happens, I'm going to make progress on that. And yeah, you're right. It might get held up in another department, but it's chipping away for sure.
When you look back on your experience, what are some of the most important lessons that you've learned about building a finance team? And are there any mistakes that you would have liked to have avoided?
One of the things that I was allowed that I was, that has helped me grow so much is just being in the room. And what that means is whether it's the insurance renewal and I'm understanding how that gets negotiated, if it's the commercial insurance as well as another one, it's kind of the operational sides of finance. And I think it was earlier in my career, I was so in the finance mindset, get the books closed. Once that's done, move on to the projects, post-close reconciliations. Okay, we're acquiring clinics and start that cycle over month after month. And where I really have grown is peeling back the curtain and how all the functions work together and how do the finance decisions fit into that? Because that's second to none where you can really add value in my role. And in terms of mistakes, I think it's a delicate balance of pushing on people, but also being patient. And it goes back to accountability and empathy and assuming everyone's doing the best they can and still holding people to high standards. So I find that I'm always working on that. And I think my job is to push people to their highest ability, but it's also to listen to them when there's a reason something's come up. This team's hard to work with, or we're getting stuck here, because it's never as simple as you're hoping it is when you're trying to get something done.
Now, you did take the leap with your career. You took the leap when you decided to leave the firm and go out and work in a business. Then you took the leap when you decided to keep progressing your career. What advice would you give to others who are possibly considering that, but not quite sure or don't know how to go about it?
It's the openness to take the risk, but also you want to have be energized about what you're going to take on next. So every day I wanted to come in and say, okay, I feel like I've mastered that. Hey, can I look at that? I know you've been working on that. And working for people who are willing to give you that, to trust you with that as well. And being a part of a growing company also helps it. So I think especially in the finance field, there's a lot of really safe paths. And that is totally great for a lot of people. But I think that often when you take risks, that's where there's usually the most opportunity as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have found, you know, there's something in that discomfort that if you embrace it instead of running away from it, that's where the growth really happens. And once you push through that uncomfortable point, it's quite rewarding on the other side when you've learned something new or tried something that scares you. So I think that's great advice. You've offered us lots of great advice today. If you had to pick just two things that you'd want the audience to remember on building up a finance function from the ground up, what would it be?
I would say the first one would be get your processes in place that can scale. Make sure if it works for us, it's 10 clinics. Is it going to work for 100? And the second would be invest in the right people, because people are your biggest asset.
Amy, I really do appreciate you sharing your experience and your thoughts on how to grow a finance function. Such great advice for our audience. Whenever we do have a guest on the show, we have two rapid fire questions that we'd like to ask. So are you ready for those?
Ready.
All right. First one, what do you think is the hallmark of a mature finance organization in terms of how they operate?
I would say proactive communication across all those other departments and over-communication.
Excellent. And what is your go-to way of helping you stay productive during the workday?
It would be not letting my email run my day and starting with the hardest thing first that I know has to be accomplished. No.
Amy, thanks again for joining me today. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more on this topic, sign up for our free newsletter, where each week you'll get a roundup of exclusive resources designed to help you grow your leadership skills and drive strategic transformation across your business. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.